Thanks for downloading this podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be rebroadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by searching iTunes for Radio Le Mans or visiting RadioLeMans.com.
The hourly update on Radio Le Mans with Audi TDI. Vorsprung durch Technik.
So we're 17 and a half hours into the 2015 running of the Le Mans 24 hours. That means there's less now than 6.5 hours to go. And Porsche still lead the way. They've completed 283 laps with the number 19 car, which Nick Tandy is currently driving. It received a little bit of extra bodywork at its last pit stop, which cost it a bit of time, but it was going to cost it the time anyway because of having to come into the pits whilst the safety car was out. In second place, 2 minutes and 38 seconds behind, is the number 9 Audi of René Rast. And interestingly, that gap is pretty much identical now to what it was before the safety car came out. So that was one case where the safety car kind of effect we lucked into, and it didn't affect things too much. So first number 19, second number 9, third number 17, the second of the two Porsches. This is the one with Mark Webber behind the wheel. Mark has just made a pit stop for fuel only and headed off on his way again. But as a result of that pit stop, he's going to be a little bit further behind the Audis. He's 16 seconds behind the number 9 Audi. In fourth place is the number 7 Audi, Marcel Fessler, suffering from having had a long pit stop to repair some bodywork damage which was done to the car just before he got, while he was in the car, and as a result that car has lost a couple of laps on the leaders and has to make up over a lap in order to catch up with the cars ahead. We were all on the lead lap. Behind the number 7 Audi is the number 8 Audi. Oliver Jarvis is at the wheel of that one, and he's only 26 seconds behind Marcel Fessler. So 7 is 4th, 8th is 5th. In 6th place is the other Porsche, the number 18, the black car. Neil Jarny is running in that one. That's had a few delays here and there, a couple of offs at the Mulsanne corner, and then trips back to the garage to have the car repaired. In 7th place is the number 2 Toyota with Alexander Wurz driving. In 8th place is the number 1 Toyota with Sebastian Buemi driving it. And in 9th place is the first of the LMP2 cars. This is a KCMG car, Richard Bradley at the wheel of the Orica. He's completed 257 laps and has over 3 minutes back to the second place car, which is the number 26 G-Drive Ligier with Julien Canal at the wheel. And then in third place in LMP2 is the number 38, the mighty Jota car, Mighty Gibson, the Jota car number 38, who is, how far is he behind? He's not quite a lap behind, but very nearly a lap behind, 3 minutes behind. Oliver Turvey then playing catch up, but in third place with the Jota car number 38. That's LMP2. In GTE Pro Class, we've got Tony Villander leading the way in the Ferrari as a result of an extra pit stop that was made by the Chevrolet Corvette. Oliver Gavin taking the car back out again, but they changed the brakes while the safety car was out, changed the rear brakes while the safety car was out, and that cost Oliver Gavin the position. He was leading the class, but now he's 10 seconds behind Tony Villander in the Ferrari. So it's 51 from 64 in GTE Pro. Then number 91, the Porsche of Michael Christensen, who is just over a minute behind the Ferrari and Corvette. So 51, 64, 91 in GTE Pro. In GTE Am, number 98, the Aston Martin, still leading the way there. Paul Dallalana at the wheel of that car. In second place is Andrea Bertolini, who's a minute and 56 seconds behind in the SMP Ferrari. And then in third in GTE Am is the number 77, Patrick Dempsey, entered. In fact, Patrick Dempsey driven at the moment. Number 77 car is 2 laps behind the class leader, but nevertheless third place in GTE Am. So the first three positions in GTE Am: first number 98, second number 72, and third number 77.
The hourly update on Radio Le Mans with Audi TDI. Vorsprung durch Technik.
Tom Milner, that was a bit of an odd time to do the brake change. You lost out on that pit stop sequence, but are you still happy running second at this point in the race?
Yeah, I mean, to be still in the hunt here is obviously a good thing. That brake change was a bit long. We had enough of a buffer to just only lose one safety car, and we ended up losing two, so that was unfortunate. But the car's good. You know, the whole reason why we did that was make sure that we had a good car for the end. Which at this point we definitely have a good car. So now it's just a matter of getting to the last hour and a half, and then pushing from there.
Who gets to finish the race?
I'm not sure yet. I've just kind of come back to the garage here since I'm sleeping. So I'll get in next, and I don't know. We'll see. Kind of depends.
Thanks, Tommy. Good luck.
Thanks. No problem.
A Corvette update from our Nismo pit lane team, and we should point out on the racetrack, things have hotted up a little bit. The number 7 car has in fact gotten one of its laps back on the racetrack from the number 19 car as he passed the number 19 going into the Mulsanne corner. He being Marcel Fassler passing Nick Tandy, and that was a great move. And now as they have made the run all the way up through Indianapolis, Arnage, and are going through the Porsche corners, the Porsche curves, Fassler has pulled away.
And that was a declaration of intent that I'm not going to be sitting here. I am out for
We've
you.
We've not given up.
Yeah. Keep your eyes on your mirror because I'm going to be there soon.
And in fact, coming out of the second chicane, there was an absolutely outstanding move as both, these faster prototypes split one of the AAI Porsches, and Fassler went around the outside and then ducked right back into the slipstream of the Porsche. It was an absolutely fantastic move. Now we've got trouble for the 40 car, who has gotten himself, did a nice job. Tracy Krohn took one for the team there. He'd gotten himself in a little bit deep going into the second chicane on the inside of one of the AM Ferraris. I think that was the number 62 car of Townsend Bell. And he, instead of crashing into Bell, he spun the 40 car.
It was a bit like the a mirror image of the incident that he had with one of the ESM cars yesterday going into the first chicane, where he did exactly the same thing, only everything was on the sort of inverted side. It was on the right going into a right-handed one rather than being on the left going into a left-handed one.
And he did tag the ESM car, and they both did the kind of synchronized spin.
It ended in the same result. Just going back to Marcel Fessler, as you say, not giving up, pushing as hard as he can. They know how to win Le Mans, those three drivers. They've done it before. One of the reasons is that they never give up. It's not the fastest lap of the car, but it's the fastest lap that Marcel Fessler has done in the car at 3 minutes 18.613. And that was on the lap that he took the place. Then he's come across some traffic, as we saw, and that slowed him down just a little bit, down to a 3 minutes 20. We're going to slow down even more now because we've got a slow zone on the Mulsanne straight, or not on the Mulsanne straight, but going into the second chicane, Jim, to deal with Tracy Krohn's beached Ligier.
It didn't look like he had beached it that badly. It looks like he may have just stalled it. And once they get him going again, they're running out there with a snatch tractor and some of those very brave orange-clad marshals, who kudos to them. We couldn't do this wonderful sport without these people who are, frankly, volunteers. They do it for the love of the sport, and they are to be applauded for their efforts. It looks like he may indeed be a little bit beached, as you could see a little bit of the gravel kind of piled up behind his rear tires.
He'd spun on the left-hand part of that second chicane, and that therefore the back had come round, and he's sitting driver's right on the middle of the chicane facing outwards. So certainly a very dangerous position. They can't take the risk. They have to move it.
Let's go to Bruce Jones. We have the AM leader, the number 98 Aston Martin, in the pits.
In the pit and roaring away. That's Paul Dallalana, a very simple pit stop, no driver change. Back came in from the lead of GTE AM, has gone back into the lead. But the car that's chasing the SMP Racing Ferrari, they did have a driver change, and Andrea Bertolini has hopped out, and Victor Scheiter has got on board. So we're going to see if we can catch a word with Andrea. That was a good long stint, but what you need to know is the 98 Aston Martin, at least that's waving the flag for the Aston Martin mark in leading that grouping.
Great news that that Aston Martin is still in the hunt here, although obviously GTE Pro, we have Tony Vallande in the Ferrari leading that, with Olli Gavin in the Corvette next, and then the Christiansen Porsche in third place in the Pro category. So that Aston not dominating as they have done in the past.
No, but Ferrari and Corvette are.
Yeah, and that's it's healthy throughout the field, and but we all love the sport and we all love this race, and we know that it goes through peaks and troughs, and this is very, very much a peak that we've got. Great factory teams that, okay, it's kind of come down to Porsche versus Audi, and that we might have expected to see Toyota as part of that. We've also, of course, got Nissan, who, yeah, okay, they were never going to be they were never going to be duking it out with the big guys, but they'll be back. And that whole concept that Ben Bowlby has come up with is so innovative, and I just take my hat off to them, because I think they've turned something around. And yeah, it might not work, but if it does, it's going to change this sport completely.
I'm certainly giving them a year to prove it. I'm not saying yes or no until they've had a full year to develop that car. I mean, Porsche last year, after a full year of private development, came here and had a rough go of it. Not as rough as Nissan is having, but Nissan isn't as far along in the development as Porsche was when they arrived.
And it was a completely different concept for Nissan.
And Porsche. Frankly, you had some people from Audi that moved across the hall and took a lot of knowledge with them.
Yeah,
so if this is a brand new concept from Nissan.
If it turned out that it did work, then we are into a whole different world of front-engined prototype cars. We're into, because we know how it happens, that it's, call it fashion, call it development, call it evolution, call it what you will, but if a concept works, then everybody else follows suit, and we could have something which is completely different, and that would just be exciting.
Let's go back to Bruce Jones.
Andrea Bertolini, thanks. It's all right, that was the BR leaving the next garage. Andrea Bertolini, second in the GTM class for Ferrari, getting closer.
Yeah, it's tough, because Aston is really quick, but you know, the 24 hour we will pushing until the end. We try to do our best, and we'll see at the end who will be in the front.
You're looking quite tired. Was it a hard shift?
Yeah, we did a lot of triple stint, and now it's time to rest and to drink a couple of coffee to be ready for the final stint.
So Victor Scheiter can do a good job. Thank you very much, Andrea.
Pit stop also for the number 91 Porsche, the third place car in GTE Pro. Jörg Bergmeister has gotten behind the wheel of that car. So first three cars in the class, all on the lead lap. Tony Vilander leading in the Ferrari number 51, chased by Oliver Gavin, 7.9 seconds behind in the number 64 Corvette, and then Jörg Bergmeister now out in the Porsche number 91. When he came into the pits, he's now about 2 minutes and 38 seconds behind after the pit stop. But if anything, any problem should befall either the 51 or 64, Bergmeister is going to be there to pounce.
In the leading car, I am rapidly leaning towards making Nick Tandy my man of the race. Not necessarily I talked about the hero stint that he did in the middle of the night, which just pulled away from everybody else. He was faster than anybody else on the circuit, and it wasn't anything particularly fantastically special, but it was just better than anybody else was doing at the time. And he was very humble about it afterwards when Bruce, I think it was, or Nick was talking to him. Well, he's only been in the car for a little while, but he's doing it again. He's just easing away from Rene Rast. And as he eases away from Rene Rast, he's also easing away from Mark Webber. And Mark Webber's in another Porsche, so he's just expanding those gaps all the time. And if anything, Rene Rast is going to have to be looking to his mirrors at what Mark Webber is doing behind him, because the balance between the 9 and the 17, the 9 Audi and the 17 Porsche, seems to swing from one way to another. Sometimes the 9 is faster, sometimes the 17 is faster, and when they're only separated as they are at the moment by 22 seconds, you can't afford to be doing that too much. That's the kind of situation for the top three places. And, you know, we've got a 6-hour race to run yet, so there's still plenty of time for anything to go, anything to happen with this.
And obviously with cars running full fuel loads, lower fuel loads, going through all of that, that some of the cars, I haven't looked at the data, but maybe the Porsche is better with a full fuel load than the Audi is, or vice versa. And so it is nip and tuck all the way through. Now, obviously, all cars are better or worse in different conditions, but nonetheless, what you get is that the nip and tuck is coming backwards and forwards all the time.
Very much so, Paul. And I mean, part of the feature of yesterday's race, the start of the race, the high temperatures meant that the Porsches couldn't keep up with the Audis. It was only when darkness fell that the pendulum kind of swung in Porsche's favour. But you've got to look at the race overall, Jim, and think about where the problems have been hitting. And, you know, they've been hitting Audi just as much as they have Porsche, if not more so. It's number 18 Porsche that's had the problems.
Yes, I think there have been definitely more problems. The 8 and 7 have had issues. 9 is, so far, as he touches wood, is the only one that really hasn't had any major issues. Bruce Jones, the pit stop cycles continue for the Audi. The number 8 has made a call.
Yes, Oliver Jarvis brought the number 8 Audi in, standard refueling only. What I thought was interesting is as he drove out, they had the onboard camera looking back at his face. But Ollie's got quite sort of intense looking eyes, but it's just the level of tiredness. I saw it when I was speaking to Andrea Bertolini, who just got out of the 72 Ferrari. I think come what may, driving from darkness into the light, you're tired before you start. And I'm sure Ollie Jarvis will need a good rest when he gets out. The number 9 Audi now comes in for a pit stop. Again, they have a whole new set of tyres lined up. Will they put them on board? Let us see. At the moment, they're going through the first part, which is the mechanic hopping on the nose of the car and cleaning the windscreen. But right now, the best place of the Audis, the number 9, Rene Rast, is staying on board. Will they put new rubber on, or will he be waved out of the way? No one's standing in front of the car to wave him out. Now they are, and I think it is going to be refueling only. Yes, indeed. Underway again goes Rene Rast.
On the spot and in the heart of the action, the Nismo Pit Lane team. Nismo. Eat. Sleep. Race. Repeat.
Radio Le Mans, 91.2 FM, Mobile One Radio Le Mans for 2015. And Jim Roller coming to you from the Mobile One Broadcast Center with the Pauls, Paul Tarsi and Paul Truswell, my two erstwhile colleagues here for the next 10 minutes. And then I'll be turning the microphone over. My race will be run, gentlemen. So,
Is that your final stint?
I'll be standing by.
I think you should. I think every
standing by.
Yeah, I think you should kind of stand at the back and limber up before every pit stop just to make sure, it's in case one of us is feeling a bit weak, you know.
Put a microphone on, get all ready.
That was a 15-lap stint from Rene Rast coming in there, largely because most of it was done under the safety car conditions. He got a little bit of a longer session there. So... I'd say that's the reason why he came in then. It was a scheduled stop. Nick Tandy has probably only got fuel enough for one more lap. So the race leader, for the moment, has stretched his lead between himself and second place man. But he'll be in pretty soon, I reckon, probably on the end of this lap that he's on at the moment.
Like the little engine that could, the Toyotas continue to carry on. Plugging along, Shay Adam, what's the latest on the number two car?
Well, they were taking a page out of Audi's book there, Jim. They did fuel only, a little bit of a windshield wipe, and then sent Alex Wirtz back out on the track. They didn't even bother with the illusion of new tires, though. They just did fuel and then said, nope, go back out and you're not done yet. But this end of pit lane is starting to get really busy as Chris Cumming is also doing a fuel and go in the 34 P2 car. Now they've decided to do tires since he did have that spin. They only changed the front right, though. They did not change more than one tire. We're starting to see the 12 Rebellion is coming in for its pit stop. The 35-0 Racing will also be coming in. And a certain number 77, which is a fan favorite, will be making a stop here soon. And Mr. Dempsey himself will be getting out of the car.
We didn't ever come to a conclusion about what caused the bodywork problems on the number 7 Audi. We saw as it started to get light, the half the rear bodywork just get blown away from that number 7 Audi. Now,
well, the team didn't know.
They didn't know, and it happened. I think having thought about it, that it happened through the Porsche curves, and he did cross the start-finish line far to driver's right, and I think that probably the team said, let's have a look at it, do another lap, and then we'll have it ready for whatever it is that we need. But we have to assume that there was impact contact somewhere, because
but he says he didn't feel anything, he didn't hit anything. So
if that's the case, that's a design issue.
Yeah, exactly.
And if that's the case, it can
happen again. Well, the speculation was that perhaps he had contacted a curb and that had possibly cracked something, and then through time with the aerodynamic, you know, pulling at it, that sort of stuff. But yeah, I mean, who knows? That's pure speculation.
Oh, but we do that.
Yes, we do.
And it is just that if it's happened once, it can happen again.
Oh, exactly.
And that's always a worry. That's why so many teams will pitch up here with three cars, because you do actually shorten the odds, or lengthen the odds, I'm not sure which way it is, that you can actually avoid.
They like to see you come into the betting hall then.
Yeah, they do. Oh, goodness me, yes. I'll just leave my shirt
perhaps
here.
Yes. And my wallet. And my shoes.
Yes. And my children. it's just a thought.
It's a fair trade.
That it could happen. That the impregnable Audi sometimes just gets a little bit of a chink in that armor.
Well, right now, hopes ride with the number 9 Audi. Rene Rast, kind of waiting for him to cross into sector 2, to complete sector 2, to see just how much he trails the number 17 car after we have had his most recent pit stop. Right now, as you may have heard Paul moments ago tell us, Nick Tandy is leading the race in the number 19 car, but he is due a pit stop. That car has completed 21 pit stops so far, and Weber, Rast, Vassler, Jarvis, Yanni, meaning the rest of the Audis and Porsches, have all completed 22 pit stops. Alexander Wirtz in the number 2 Toyota has completed 22, and number 1 Toyota Sebastian Buemi has completed 21. Paul, of those leaders, who for Porsche has the least amount of time in the pits, and who for Audi?
Yeah, I'm just going to go through those. Porsche, in fact, all of the Porsches have spent less time in the pits than all of the Audis. So if you lift the top six, three Audis and three Porsches, in order of the time spent in the pits, then the least time spent in the pits is the number 18 Porsche, which has spent 21 minutes and 47 seconds in the pits. Then you get the number 17 Porsche, 21 minutes and 51 seconds in the pits. And only then do you get the Audi that spent the least time in the pits, and that's the number 9 car. The Porsche that spent the most time in the pits, strangely, is the one that leads the race, the number 19 car, which has spent 25 minutes in the pits.
That tells you how fast they are out on the racetrack, if they're able to make up that much time. And speaking of that car, the 19 and the 7 have both come into the pit lane. Let's check with Bruce Jones in Audi country.
Audi country coming to a halt, and again, let's see, are we going to get a change of driver? No, I thought we might see Andre Lotterer coming out, but Marcel Fassler possibly, I think he knows that I want to interview him, so he's staying on board. So we'll have to wait a little longer to find out from the horse's mouth. Anyhow, Shea is down at the Porsche.
The Porsche has already gone away, fuel only, left Nick Tandy behind the wheel of the car. Bruce, you'll have a better view of this, but I think the Porsche beat the Audi back out onto the circuit.
Yes, Jay, he did. All that work out on the racetrack for the number 7 car to get his lap back. He just got put another lap down again.
That must be so frustrating.
Oh, my God.
It's the same old story we've been saying all along. A 5-second difference in the pit stop time, purely on refueling. And that was enough, as Shay described, to get the Porsche out ahead of the Audi.
With these cars being so competitive, that to lose 5 seconds that you've scrabbled back must be so disconcerting, because it's going to be very difficult now to get it back, as the two cars will now be going onto Mulsanne Straight, and that there will be 5 or 10 cars lengths between them. It all starts again.
Exactly so. Just describing, Marcel Fessler is going out now for a quadruple stint. He's on the fourth part of that stint. Nick Tandy is only going out for his second stint. Remember, he took the car over after the car made its pit stop during the safety car, and now he's going out for his second stint after that, which is a thing that I like, because we can now look at all the lap times and do an average without having to worry when the safety car was out and therefore mess up the average lap times.
A close moment for our race leader in P1 and our race leader in P2, as Tandy was coming towards the pits in the Porsche curves. At the end of the Porsche curves, he came upon the number 47 car, the P2 leader, who was passing one of the AM Ferraris. I think it was the number 72 car. And in fact, they tried to do the old split, and the 47, to give the 19 enough room to get through, went way off the racetrack and almost did some agricultural racing in the grass, but he was able to get it back onto the racing surface before he had to go through the grass. That was a close moment.
And we also have Alex Mortimer in the 55 car, the Ferrari, which was weaving from side to side, going very slowly. And the only thing I can think of that you would do that for is if you're running out of fuel. The crew is ready for him in pit lane, but the car has actually stopped on driver's left just after Indianapolis. I think that car's run out of fuel.
Sorry, which car was that, Paul? I wasn't looking at the screen at the right time.
55 Ferrari.
Thank you for that.
With Alex Mortimer on board.
That did kind of have that look of...
Yeah, it's done 14 laps already. It was trying to do 15. Bear in mind that during the time that it was out, we had the safety car out, I think. I need to double check that one. But it's obviously overestimating the amount of economy it could get behind the safety car. 14 laps is easy under normal circumstances, and what they've tried to do is to stretch it to 15 with the safety car influence.
I think there's no doubt about that's what they've tried to do, because it was that weaving from side to side, which maybe if he'd been a mile or more further down the road, it could have worked out, but it seems that car is dry. But let's not forget Klaus Ludwig coming home with a Porsche 962, completely out of fuel, and he drove it back from somewhere round about Indianapolis on the starter motor, if you remember, Paul.
Yeah, I mean, what generally happens in situations like this is that if you just leave it for a while, you get a little bit of condensation, and that then allows a little bit of fuel to go through. But they don't quite make starter motors like they used to.
They don't make a lot of things like they used to, Paul.
Partly from the point of view that the regulations also don't really encourage you to do such things as driving back using the starter motor.
Well, we have 6 hours to go. It's 9 o'clock European Central Time. And it's time for me to say thank you to you two gentlemen. As always, it is a pleasure to be in your presence here in the Mobile One Broadcast Center. Have a good rest of your race. I'll be standing by and enjoying the finish. Johnny Palmer's up next.
All the action, all the latest news from the pits and the paddock. Informed comment. There's always been and always will be just one authority on the race. And just one place to listen. Radio Le Mans. You can't manage without it.
Mobile One.
Mobile One.
Engineered to perform. Around the world.
Around the clock.
Endurance racing direct to you.
RadioLeMans.com.
Get closer to motorsport with Mobile One.
Mobile One.
So 9 o'clock in the morning for the 83rd running of the 24 hours of Le Mans. It feels like the finish is just around the corner. And then I realise, no, hold on a minute, we've still got a whole World Endurance Championship race to go. 6 hours and an awful lot could still happen. We have a Ferrari stopped at Indianapolis. There are question marks as to exactly what happened to the number 7 Audi when it came round minus a bit of bodywork. And the metronomic pace still of Porsche out front. Nick Tandy from Mark Webber, the 19 from the 17. But I just have a feeling that this race still has something, a twist in the tail, maybe more than one twist in the tail. And Paul Tarsi and Paul Truswell will help me go through the next 3 hours between 9 and midday today.
It is 6 hours to go, isn't it? Yes, it is.
I hope so.
Yeah, 18 hours into the race. I don't want to say too much because there's still a long way to go.
Oh, but, go on.
But I'll give you a clue now, because I don't want to preempt what might happen as a result of the race, but there is a lovely possible link with another race that happened here a few years ago that might happen if something happens at the end of this race.
Years ago or many, many years ago?
It was a race that I was at, and it's a race that a lot of people here will have been at.
Right.
So it's certainly within living memory.
Yes.
And you can guess what I'm trying to do is interpret who's going to win, and it's just trying to find a little link there to what might that have been. So, you know, the Twitter can go mad as to what I might be thinking of.
Please do, by the way, at RSL_studio. That's your invitation to go crazy Twitter.
But whatever you do, don't give away who's going to win, because there's too far to go.
That was really very, very cryptic until the last bit, Paul. And I think I'm with you now. But we'll wait and see. But so the Ferrari, the number 55 car, has been towed and is now being pushed away from the circuit at Indianapolis. Being taken down, I think, to Arnage. Looking as we can from that. Crew looking very disconsolate in their pit garage, because very obviously that ain't coming home, and that must be so frustrating because somebody has made that call,
or it was a mistake. I mean, that was the famous thing that happened in 2003, wasn't it, when Frank Bieler ran out of fuel. It was just a bad call by Frank, didn't get into the pit lane in time. What were we going to say? Oh yes, and of course, because that car's being towed away, that's now the site of the next slow zone. So if, like me, you're looking at average lap times, the slow zone messing those up for a little while whilst we sort those out. So welcome back, Johnny.
Thank you. Yes, it's good to be back. I feel pretty fresh, actually. Well, that's because I've had about 4 hours sleep. And I'm not sure how long Jeroen Blekemolen has been in the car, but I do know for a fact that he now joins one half of our Nismo pit lane team, Bruce Jones.
Jeroen, how are you feeling? It's Sunday morning. You're looking a little warm. You just hopped out of the Viper.
Yeah, actually feeling great. I just had a really nice triple stint, setting fastest lap of GTEM. And really driving with the GTE Pro guys. I was with the AF Corsa guys. I followed Fisichella for 1 hour. I think then I followed the other AF Corsa car. But yeah, car is running great. I really loved my run here.
Who's taken over from you?
Mark Miller. And then it'll be me again until the end. So we'll see. I mean, we're trying to get the podium. It won't be easy. We have the pace, but we had two or three really small delays. And it's so competitive that we might miss out on the podium.
And how have you found it, being able to sort of coach Mark through his rookie performance at Le Mans? Has he really benefited?
Well, I mean, the car is just running really well here. We missed a little bit of top speed. But when I follow the GT Pro cars, I could get nice slipstreams, and then we were okay.
Okay, thanks very much, Jeroen. Clearly, Jeroen didn't quite catch my last question there, but that's understandable. There's a lot of noise down here.
It was a darn good stint, though, Bruce. He hinted at it. He was at the wheel for 3 hours and 12 minutes. And for a big, heavy car like a Viper, that's a very good stint indeed. Not quite sure. I'm a big fan of Jeroen Blekemolen. Of course, with a lot of history in the family again here at Le Mans.
Mm. Sharing with Mark Miller, as he said, and Mark now in the car, Ben Keating as well. So two Americans and the Dutchman, Blekemolen. And yeah, certainly doing the lion's share of the driving in the recent time of the race anyway.
It's that booby trap, isn't it, Paul, of Jeroen Blekemolen, and you still want to call him Michael rather than Jeroen. And like all those other ones, I keep on wanting to call Alex Buncombe Jonathan, which was his father, who raced minis in the UK. And all those racing dynasties are absolutely great. Great fun to play with.
And you want to call Jan Kevin or something, don't you?
yes.
No, actually. So the Corvette number 64 just making a stop. Ollie Gavin, and in fact, side by side for the GT lead, Bruce Jones. You got a good view of that down the pit lane.
It was astonishing. I really didn't think he had enough grunt. Well, of course the Corvette has enough grunt. I just didn't think he had enough time to get ahead of 51. And he tucked his nose, and it took a little complicity from 51, so they didn't touch. But hey, that's what it's about. 6 hours remaining, racing even in the pit lane. So good move there by Ollie Gavin.
Yeah, it's my mistake, actually. Tommy Milner now at the wheel and racing Tony Vallander in the number 51 Ferrari from the grid boxes, or the pit stop boxes, to the line. And in the end, the yellow Corvette got the judgment, but it was the old bottleneck at the end of the pit lane, and something had to give, and actually respectful driving in the end from the Finn.
But it was just like real world motorway driving, wasn't it? Because there was that row of cones at the end of the pit lane, and I thought, this is exactly what you see when you've got that non-existent roadworks on the motorway.
And it was all down to the fact that the Corvette had the driver change. And on the previous stop, of course, remember, they'd had that brake change, which they'd done on the car whilst the safety car was out, which kind of lost them some time. But it was a 1 minute, 25 second pit stop for Corvette in order for them to change driver, get Tommy Milner into the car. Whereas the Ferrari, fuel only stop for the Ferrari at the end there. Tony Vallander stayed behind the wheel and his pit stop time just 49 seconds.
On the Krone Racing Ligier in just a second, but straight down to our Nismo pit lane team once more, and Shea Adam this time.
The trouble started before they even got to the end of pit lane for the 51. It was very nearly a collision with the 47, the P2 leader, as when Vlander was released from his pit box, the 47 was coming into his, and they missed each other by inches. It was cringeworthy, and the Italian contingency of AF Corsa universally stood up and threw their hands up in the air and started shouting. So a lot of displeasure before they even got to that little kerfuffle at the end of pit lane.
That's a polite way of saying it. And in fact, that kerfuffle is just working its way by now. A car that is off track. Tracy Crone in the number 40 Ligier from Crone Racing, which rotated coming out of Mulsanne Corner, nearly collected the number 12 Rebellion at the same time, and is now off the driver's left on the grass there. But thankfully, the two leading GT Pro cars were able to get by. They're still nose to tail, Milner from Villander, but were able to get by, even though there are double yellows being waved there to warn of the stricken car. So no overtaking for a brief period, but they're well and truly into the green flag area now, heading for Arnage. And Villander keen to get by the American. No opportunity to do that, though, at the right-hander.
And this really is nip and tuck. When the number 12 came across Tracy Crone's car, it was a bit like somebody that you meet on the stairs, where you both go to go one way, then you both go to go to the other. And that the number 12 car did a little jink each way a couple of times before actually deciding to go to driver's left of the stricken Crone car, which now is mobile again, although slowly mobile, coming away from Mulsanne Corner.
Yeah, Tracy's found a reverse gear there and managed to get the car away from the Armco barrier, and it is trundling its way now down the straight from Mulsanne Corner itself. Lots of cars that need to get by it. Meanwhile, let's stay focused on the GT Pro battle, which is heading towards the end of this lap. This will be 251 laps then for Tommy Milner and Tony Villander. There's about half a second between them, and then a further minute and 5 seconds or thereabouts back to Jörg Burgmeister, who's in the number 91 Porsche.
And we've been talking about the Blaker Molen Viper, which is nose first at the Ford chicane, driver's left, and is now working its way back onto the circuit, going sort of against the general flow on the hard standing between the gravel and the barrier. Back on the track, no damage done, except probably a bit of pride
to Mark Miller, who has taken over that car from Jeroen Blaker Molen, and yes, rejoins. Thankfully didn't delay the number 31 ESM Ligier, which came close to having to dodge out of the way, but I don't think the run through the Ford chicane for the American car was affected too badly. Paul Truswell.
Yeah, Mark Webber is in pit lane, which is actually say is going to come in at the end of this lap, and then I realised that he'd already got to the end of this lap, and so he's in pit lane coming in for a scheduled stop, this being his 22nd scheduled stop, and that will put him up over the 22-minute mark of length of time in the pit lane. So he's still having a good race, still there. He was in second place, but he'll be pushed down to third as a result of the stop. It should be a fuel only stop. Oh no, it won't. It's the end of Mark's stint, isn't it? Because it's a quadruple stint for Mark Webber. So that will be the car being handed back over to Timo Bernhardt for the number 17 car, and a longer pit stop therefore required whilst they change the tyres.
And still the GT Pro battle continues. Because they came out of the pits, we've got this for ages. This is going to be nip and tuck. We're not going to see one of them disappear halfway through what otherwise would be a good battle. My guess is that the Ferrari is slightly faster than the Corvette in this trim right now. He seems to be pushing a little bit harder than the Corvette is comfortable with, although that could change throughout this whole stint. But we have got a treat for the next few minutes and more of the battle between the Corvette and the Ferrari at the front of GTE Pro.
Yeah, remember, Paul, that the Corvette is on newer tyres than the Ferrari, so if the Ferrari can get past, and it looks like it's about to do so, then that's a double good performance from it, because it's been out on that set of tyres already for a whole stint with Tony Villander at the wheel.
Now, yeah, the driver that was at the wheel of the Chevy Corvette before that altercation in the pit lane as the two cars exited was Ollie Gavin, and he now is with Bruce Jones.
Oliver, this has been an exciting race from start to finish, but just looking how close it was, the 64, your Corvette, just edging out ahead of the 51 Ferrari at pit exit. Fantastic stuff.
Oh, it's amazing. You know, this is one of the best races I've ever been involved in, I think. And, you know, it's just been wheel-to-wheel action all the way from the green flag or the tricolour. You know, it's amazing. You know, this race keeps throwing up these amazing battles. And, you know, we're racing the guys that won it last year now, wheel-to-wheel. We know that they've got a huge amount of experience. They're a great crew, great team. So, you know, we know we've got our work cut out, but we're ready for the challenge. We're ready to have a bit of a bare-knuckle fight with these guys. And, you know, the Porsche's just there. It's still hanging on, waiting to pick up the pieces. I don't think it's quite got the pace to fight us, but it's just lurking there in the background, and you know they're just waiting for something to break on our cars, or, you know, a little bit of contact or an incident with our two cars getting together. So 6 hours to go, so much to play for. I've just got to go over and see the guys to see when I'm back in. If I'm back in, I don't know. You know, it's just manic.
It's still effectively one round of the World Endurance Championship to run in the 6 hours, you see.
Yes, exactly that. So, you know, it's crazy when you think about it like that. But this, you sometimes get a bit stuck in a bit of a time warp here at Le Mans, you know, and you sort of think, okay, got lots of time to go, and then all of a sudden it's nearly 3 o'clock, or, you know, the race is nearly over, or, and it's just, you can't explain it sometimes. It's such a magical place.
You don't need to explain it. Brilliant job. Thanks, Ollie.
Handing over to Tommy Milner, who's doing a grand job to keep Tony Villander behind him. The gap is now 1.2 seconds, but as Paul Tarsi's quite rightly said, we're probably in for this duel until the rest of the race, depending on how Corvette play their cards. Do they have the advantage, or is the Ferrari that very slightly the better car? Of course, it's won the race twice now in the last 3 years, going for a fourth win in 3 years. So it's certainly the car of this spell of the World Endurance Championship. Well, it's only been held three times now, the World Endurance Championship, through the seasons, and the 51 car has won it every single time. Are we in for the changing of the guard, perhaps, and Chevrolet Corvette with their first win since 2011?
And didn't you just love listening to Oliver Gavin there talking about it? So up for the fight. I mean, what an enthusiast. He was, you could hear the adrenaline buzzing through him there as he, you know, talked about this fight. I mean, he talked about a bare knuckle fist fight. And I thought, well, that's a nice idiom, a nice figure of speech. And I thought, no, actually, he's going to go out there and start beating Jimmy Brody up if he sees him round the back of the garage. So if any of the pit crew reporters can get round there, I think that would be the spectacular fight to watch.
I think also we hear about the prototypes often using their passing manoeuvres on GTE cars to their advantage. As they came past us here on that previous lap at the Mobile One Broadcast Centre, what we saw was that the Corvette actually used the class-leading P2 number 47 to his advantage, getting him between the two of them through the Ford chicane. And that actually probably gave him that second lead that he has now.
A couple of messages on the screen from the clerk of the course, and one is a definite in that the 12 car was given a drive through, and I don't think the 12 Rebellion has served that yet. The other thing is that the 64 car, which is the Chevrolet Corvette of Oliver Gavin, the pit stop that we were raised eyebrows at, and for a moment holding our breath to see whether the Corvette and the Ferrari made contact at the end of the pit lane, the 64 pit stop is now under investigation. So do you think, Paul Truswell, that's to do with an unsafe release into the path of the Ferrari?
Yes, or just behaviour in the pit lane. They'll just look at the video and decide whether anything particularly dangerous was being done. I think it will probably be passed with no further action. The Rebellion has taken its drive-through penalty, though. It actually went through marginally before the message came up on the screen that it had to do it. And it was marginally after. But anyway, so that was Matthias Besch who went through the pit lane just before you read out that message, Johnny.
So that's done and dusted. We need not worry about that anymore as the Corvette number 64 snakes its way through the Dunlop chicane at the top of the hill and underneath the bridge. So the Corvette, it's a close-run thing. They were overlapping very briefly, and it did require Tony Vallander to back out of the throttle, I think, just ease off from the pit lane speed limiter to allow the Corvette to nose in front. But certainly, it's a close-run thing. I'm not sure whether I fully agree with you, Paul, that they will be let off the hook there. It'll be interesting.
It's unfortunate that there isn't enough latitude in the interpretations of the regulations. It either is or isn't.
Yes.
But if they decide it is, then that's it. There's no way around it. People often talk about the racing incident, don't they? And which actually means absolutely nothing at all. But the racing incident doesn't happen, technically. Whereas something like that, the overlap in the pit lane, it did or it didn't. I do hope that we don't get robbed of this battle simply because of that.
Number 18 Porsche in the pit lane on schedule, this being the car that's now in sixth place, having had a couple of delays because of having been thrown off the circuit at various points, and that's the main reason why it is that far back, because it's one of the cars with the lowest pit stop time, but it's been parked at Mulsanne Corner for a little bit longer than most cars have, having had two offs there. So that's why, even though the pit stop time is low, it's that far down the field, the number 18 Neil Jani Porsche. And then after that, I'm trying to work out whether or not René Rast is increasing his pace a little bit, because the other complexion on this is whether the Porsches, the 919 hybrid Porsches, are going to be able to continue their pace, which they've shown throughout the night, or whether they're going to slip into daylight mode, as we saw yesterday, where the Audis were able to lap consistently more quickly than the Porsches. So as soon as we start getting a few laps, and we've just had one where René Rast was quicker than Nick Tandy, we'll have to see whether or not he's going to be able to then continue it. Unfortunately for Audi, and it's not the first time we've said this at Le Mans, there's only one Audi really against two of the opposition, the two opposition being two Porsches though.
In LMP2, it is still the story of the KCMG Orica 05. Richard Bradley back at the wheel, the number 47 car leading the class then, from Julien Canal now in the number 26 G-Drive Ligier, the orange and black car. Car 38, Oliver Turvey on board the Jota Sport Gibson, running in third position, so on for a podium after winning the race last year, our Jota. Fourth place, car 48, Mark Patterson, back on board the Murphy Prototypes Orica 03R. Slow Straka car, I notice, on the start-finish line. They're not amongst the top five, but are just outside of it, actually, as we stand. So in fifth position, it's the Pipo Durrani-driven G-Drive Ligier, car number 28, ahead of Chris Cumming in the number 34 Oak Ligier, the American driver who is at the wheel of the number 34 pink and black car. Then it's Nick Leventis on board the number 42 car, and there are yellow flags now being displayed because of the slow Straka dome, in seventh position in the class. Nick Manassian on board the number 27 BR01 from SMP Racing is next up. Johannes van Overbeck in the Ligier from ESM, car 31, next on the timing screen before you see Ivan Bellerossa for car 45. So Ibanez Racing doing okay and in the top 10 just about, I think, for the French squad. But slow for Nick Leventis as he climbs the hill through Dunlop Curve.
It's the good news is he's not moving slowly. The bad news is he's not moving at all. That the car has stopped. Oh, and Tracy Crone has gone around in circles again. That car has had such a torrid time. It's spent an awful lot of time facing in the wrong direction. That's on the outside of Arnage, car facing into the barrier. I don't think it's touched the barrier, but nonetheless, it's sitting there. The car stopped. Nick Leventis's car stopped on the start-finish line, sort of opposite pit out, I think it would be fair to say.
is leaking all sorts of nasty stuff in there, and I think that Bruce Jones can give us some more information.
I can. He's opposite, just beyond the Audi garages, so just opposite the innovation station, if you will, and sitting there. He is in the cockpit. Obviously, the marshals run up the pit lane, but they're on the pit wall side, so we need some marshals on the other side of the circuit. Liquid leaking out of the back of the Straka. Oh, he's got it almost fired up. He's trying to get it going again. It nearly worked. Not going anywhere just yet, I'm afraid.
But the problem with that is that even if he did get it working, he's now got to do a complete lap to get it back into the pits, because there's no hiding place from that. So that's going to be a big ask, as I think the youth of today say.
And the problem is that fluid looks pretty integral to the workings of the car, and obviously with it pouring out the back and all over the road, then there is an issue with the car won't actually make that lap that it needs to do before it can head into pit lane and to be seen by the Straka team. You were posing the question, or at least the theory earlier on, Paul Truswell, that Audi, in an attempt to catch the Porsches that lead the race, might think about stinting their tyres 5 times, so actually adding an extra one onto the quadruple stint that we've seen them do already. Has there been an occasion where they've actually managed to do that, or decided to do that?
No, there hasn't. And I have had a list of about 7 reasons why they may not do that. There are lots of possible reasons why, if all of those conditions are satisfied. But one of the dangers about doing a 5-stint strategy is if the safety car comes out whilst you're out on a 5-stinter, then you have to come in order not to go over your driving limit. Whereas if you're on a 4-stinter and the safety car comes out and you have to stay in the car for another half an hour, it doesn't really matter.
Right.
The other thing is purely about, we don't know quite how... what the tyre wear characteristics are, and whether there are certain things that Michelin with Audi may have put into place which says no, the most you want to do this is for 4 stints. So it hasn't been done, neither by Audi or by Porsche or anybody else, although we have seen it in previous years of quintuple stints, although in those days the fuel economy wasn't quite as good as it was now, so a quintuple stint wasn't as long as it would be now.
Back to Bruce Jones, part of our Nismo pit lane team, with another update on the 42, Bruce.
Well, just a quickie, the car's been hooked up now and is being towed away, but one of the engineers went running from the Straka pit wall holding a sort of plastic file, and on one side he had notes and on the other side he had an illustration of the steering wheel, and obviously that was just a way to try and talk Nick Leventis through all the buttons or the sequence of buttons he might press to get that car going. Doesn't matter, it's being towed away, and as you said, Johnny, was that the life fluid, the life blood of that vehicle leaking out of the back as it sat there on the gentle incline? Anyhow, really cruel luck. Wasn't looking as though it was going to be Straka's day, and it certainly isn't now.
Yeah, that was my feeling, sadly, for Straka, and it's now able to climb the Dunlop curve, but only with the use of a tow rope on the end of one of the circuit intervention vehicles. It was in 7th position. Seventh position. So not losing those spots quite yet, but obviously with no movement, or barely any movement for the 42 car, it will start to slip down the standings for P2.
Good news from race control, car 64. Pit stop, no further action after investigation. So we continue to see that battle between the Corvette and the Ferrari is going to be unimpeded now, and we can look forward to that, as you said, Johnny, probably for the rest of this race.
So Milner from Villander now nearly up to 8 seconds, so the Corvette starting to stretch its legs ahead of the Ferrari. Jörg Bergmeister in 3rd position in GT Pro in car 91, and then it's Davide Rigon in 4th in the other AF Corsa Ferrari, but quite a way down from the leading pro cars.
We also saw just on a picture there that one of the Porsches and one of the Audis were side by side past the stricken Straka, and that they did actually touch as they crossed the start finish line.
Interesting. So Nick Tandy and Marcel Fessler, the cars you're talking about, 19 and 7. And Bruce Jones, did you catch it?
Well, I just happened to look over the pit wall and wondered about it, but one of the Porsche representatives has just sprinted down to race control. I think he wants to make that point very forcibly. Maybe Shay will find out. I'm about to check out and go and see if Jim's eaten all the bacon. But anyhow, he certainly was very quick off the mark, and nobody from Audi had that sort of speed.